I'm talking to you today about confidence. This is our website here, utahchristians.org. You're welcome to see all the different upcoming programs on the website. We also have a membership class that you can take online. And give us your feedback at utahchristians@gmail.com. Everything's based on the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founder acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Too many of us go through life intimidated, insecure, thinking that everybody else is smarter than we are, better looking than we are, more talented than we are, brighter than we are. We tend to put them on a pedestal and we look down on ourselves. It's good to celebrate other people, but don't forget you're meant to be celebrated too. You have talents, you have abilities, you have brightnesses. You may not have the same natural talent that someone else has. You may not have the same natural beauty that someone else has. But the point is that you're handmade by God. You're not just knocked off in an assembly line. You're painstakingly and individually created by God. And He does that for a certain purpose. He creates you with a certain purpose in mind. So there are things that you can do that nobody else can do. In a symphony orchestra, there are violins, there are percussions, there are all kinds of different instruments, and every one of them is needed in order to contribute to the overall effect. Without one section on that orchestra, it just doesn't have the same potency. So each one of us is meant to use our talents and abilities, and God looks at you, having created you, not just some of us, but each and every one, He looks at you and He says, "You're awesome. You're amazing. You are the work of my hands and of my mind." So it's good to see the good qualities in others because everybody's been made by God and everybody has things about which we should be astonished. But if you spend all of your time celebrating others and you feel intimidated and insecure, that's not proper. I've heard people, you know, talk about how beautiful my sister is, how talented my coworker is, what a great athlete my classmate is, what a good football player he is. But we can't get so caught up in celebrating others and talking about how great others are that we lose sight of how great we are. You know, you're good at something that other people are not. And we need to have our own idea of self-worth. There's a story of the mayor of a city. He was in the annual parade going down the street in a Cadillac, waving to all of his constituents. His wife was beside him. And as they went along the parade route, they came abreast of a gas station that was owned by her former boyfriend. So the mayor kind of snickered and said out of the side of his mouth to his wife, he says, "Aren't you glad you married me? If you'd have married him, you'd be running a gas station." She said, "No, no, no. If I'd have been married him, he would have been the mayor of the town." So we need to have poise and we need to have a sense of our own self-worth. Here's a cartoon about a musician up on stage that introduces his song in this way. "This next song is about our desperate struggle to please and chronic craving for approval. I really, really hope you like it." I mean, basically he's already told people, you know, "Don't listen to me. I'm not talented. I'm insignificant. You know, I'm not worth your time." And if they walked out the door, they would only be responding to the signals that he's already sent. But Krishna means for us to walk through life with confidence. We need to think that we have royal blood in our veins. In the 14th chapter, 4th verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna claims each and every one of us as princes and princesses. He says, "Aham bija pradapita," I am the seed-giving father of all living beings. So he personally makes this claim that we are all sons and daughters of God. And we shouldn't compare ourselves to others. We shouldn't, downgrade ourselves by looking at others and seeing that they can do things that we can't do. That may be true in some areas, but in other areas we can do things they can't do. And no matter how talented or dazzling they might be, movie stars, CEOs, scientists, they have their faults also. They're not perfect. So go ahead and put your shoulders back and hold your head up high and speak clearly, look people in the eye. People are going to treat you the way you present yourself. 90% of communication is nonverbal. So if you're slumped down, if you mumble, if you're looking at the ground, if when people shake your hand it feels like a wet fish, and if you're like so many of the modern generation, they always say I think that we should get in the car and go to South Jordan and there's something going on over there, and I think would you like to go? I mean, just hold up a sign, I'm worthless, I'm a blithering idiot, don't pay any attention to me at all. Don't bring the less than mentality into your relationships, into the office, into the school, because people are going to treat you the way that you present yourself. So don't be intimidated. Speak up, carry yourself, and communicate confidence and communicate poise by your body language, by your posture, by the way your shoulders are set, by the timbre of your voice, and by the way that your eyes meet their eyes. Sometimes, of course, we'll be in the company of talented and beautiful and bright people, and we feel outmatched and all like that. But don't, be intimidated and don't cave in. We're not saying that you should think of yourself as being better than anyone else. We're not saying that you should be arrogant. But we're saying that you are no less a child of God than they are. They are no more a child of God than you are. Here's a picture of Srila Prabhupada, the founder of our Krishna Conscious Movement. And just look at the poise with which he carries himself. He was barely 5 feet tall. And many of his 20 and 25-year-old disciples were former hulking football players and, Americans who were just big in stature anyway. And yet, in his presence, they felt like... I remember one time in Australia, they'd sent me out to do some laundry for Prabhupada. And our custom was to bow down, and it wasn't enforced. We felt spontaneously like bowing down before Prabhupada, because he was just royalty. He literally represented and resonated the spiritual world. So I had gone out, and I had Prabhupada's kurta and dhoti, two or three sets, on a hanger. And I was going up the stairs to the apartment where he was staying, and it just so happened Prabhupada was coming down the stairs. So I wanted to bow down to Prabhupada. At the same time, I didn't want to bow down and get his, have his... And so I'm like, there's a landing there, and I'm like, what can I do? And I'm like 22 years old, And Prabhupada just puts you in this state, He just... he was so great, he was so awesome, that you always felt unsure of yourself in his presence. And so what I did was I bowed down and held my... And it must have looked absolutely ridiculous. But that's what, Prabhupada, you felt like you were in the presence of a king. And he just carried himself that way. One time a devotee said, Prabhupada, you look like a king. He was walking, held up, shoulders back. And Prabhupada said, Prabhupada, you look like a king. And Prabhupada said, there are so many kings over countries. There are so many countries, 150, 200, 300 countries on this planet, and there are so many kings. And this planet is one planet among so many planets in one universe. This universe is one universe among so many universes. So, and I represent He who created Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Madhas Sarvam Pravartate. He from whom everything comes. Millions and millions and millions of universes. So he said, why do you want to degrade me by calling me a king? He was more than a king. He was more than thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of kings. When people come to the temple and we want to bless them, the pujari would take the shathari. It's a crown with feet on top. And it would put it on someone's head and say, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Param Sarabhasanti Suryo Devi Vachaksaradhatam Yadvipashvu Panyavav Jagavam Sam Samindade Vishnu Paramam Param. That indicates that you are God's child. You are princes and princesses. You are heirs of the throne. You have royal blood in your veins. And you are crowned with favor. And if you'll simply remind yourself of that and act according to your heritage, you'll never have self-esteem problems. You're not better than anyone else. We're not saying that, but you're also not less than anyone else either. Here's what was written about Prabhupada by one of his disciples, about his confidence. It was a confidence not in himself or in the other person, but in Krishna, and that was effective. He wouldn't have been so effective if he had said, you've got to have confidence in yourself. There's all kinds of books in Borders and in Barnes and Nobles about how to have confidence in yourself and how to have self-improvement. But the problem with having confidence in yourself is we're just not in control. We're buffeted by time and fate and tides of change. So how can you have confidence in yourself when in fact we're not in control? It's a self-defeating proposition. You should have self-esteem considering who we represent, but not in and of ourselves, because we're incomplete and we're infinitesimal. Only when we're connected to the infinite do we actually get confidence which arises from that connection? So it says here, it's pretty hard to do if you don't have confidence in yourself. And he could have said, have confidence in me, which, although better, you don't quite know how that works. But on the other hand, he said, have confidence in the Lord of the universe. And that's a different thing altogether. Prabhupada arrived in America in 1965. He was 70 years old. He'd had two heart attacks on the boat on the way over. He had no money, less than $7 to his name, and he didn't know anyone in America. And yet he was confident. He was confident that because Krishna had sent him according to the order of his spiritual master, although that seemed like an insurmountable, impossible task, he knew that you do not get an order from God through the spiritual master unless you also get the equipment to fulfill that order. You have the Lord of the universe inside you. So don't worry about what you lack. Think about what you have. Is that when you're executing the order of the Lord, you have the Lord of the universe inside you. And nothing is impossible with His help and with His support. And it doesn't matter what family other people come from, what lineage they have, or what important people they know. We are the descendants of Krishna, the creator of millions and millions of universes. Krishna has crowned you with favor, so carry yourself like royalty. Someone said, act always as if you're wearing an individual crown. And remember that we represent the Almighty High Lord in the spiritual kingdom. And as representative of the Lord, we shouldn't go around intimidated, insecure, thinking everyone is better than we are. That's not representing the kingdom very, very well. I once saw on television the Queen of England enter into a hall where there were many, many beautiful people, movie stars, there were intelligent people, there were Nobel Prize winners, there were CEOs of big, big corporations. And when she walked in that room, it seemed like she owned the place. She waved at everybody and she treated everyone like they were their best friends, and they were bowing to her and they were deferring to her and calling her Her Majesty. Now, I mean this respectfully, but she was not the best looking person in the room. There were many movie stars that were more dazzlingly glamorous than she was. She wasn't the wealthiest person in the room. There were many people that were richer than her. And she wasn't the most intelligent person in the room. There were, after all, Nobel laureates there. But she had a sense of who she was. It wasn't because of anything she did necessarily. It wasn't because of anything she had necessarily. But she had it ingrained in her through generations and generations that she was not ordinary. She was special. She had royal blood running in her veins. And when she thought, and in being mindful of that, she'd never be intimidated by anyone. In fact, she carried herself so regally that even these beautiful, talented, wealthy people, they deferred to her. So when we remind ourselves, not just of what we have, we can't compare ourselves to others. We can't. That's a debilitating strategy. And we find, if you go through your day and find out how many times you compare yourself to others and then come up short in your own mind, you'll be hamstrung. You'll be paralyzed. You'll never be able to do anything notable in your life. We simply need to remember who we are, or better yet, whose we are. That we are parts and parcel of Krishna. And Krishna has a great plan for us. And He also will have equipped us with whatever we need in order to fulfill that plan. We don't have to be necessarily talented and successful according to the material estimation. We don't have to have the endorsement of our schoolmates, of our family members, that's all nice and well. But even if you don't have their endorsement, even if you're not crowned by people, doesn't matter. You're crowned with favor by Almighty God. You're crowned with favor by God Almighty, and who represent Him. Now, what would happen if the president walked into an important United Nations meeting with his shoulders hunched, looking down at his feet, mumbling, you know, couldn't hear him clearly? How would people have confidence in the United States of America if the leader, the head American, carried himself in that intimidating way? He has got to. He has, whether he feels like it or not, that's not important. There are many days when he may not feel like it. But that's not what's important, how he feels. What's important is that he's made by Almighty God, he's a child of God, and he's meant to represent God, just as the president is meant to represent the United States of America. So you just suck it up, you shake it off, you put your shoulders back, and you present yourself with confidence. And in the president's case, that will reinforce confidence in our great country. Arjuna, in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, was faced with a very, very complex conundrum. He couldn't see if he fought how there would be a good result. He couldn't see if he didn't fight how there would be a good result. He was relying on himself. He was trying to resort to this Barnes and Noble idea of, you know, self-improvement, have confidence in yourself. But what happens if you have confidence in yourself, but your opponent has more confidence in himself? What happens then? You know, that's a problem. Arjuna got himself all tied up in knots. I should do this, or I should do that, or I should do it. What happens if this and that happen? And so he didn't find any way out of his solution on his own. But when he referred to Krishna, Sishyasteham Sarimam Tam Prapanam, Krishna, I am your disciple and a soul surrendering to you. I'm asking you what is best for me. Then Krishna cleared it all up. So Krishna has supreme confidence. He has supreme knowledge. Krishna knew already what the outcome of the battle was going to be. He already knew. Arjuna, you're thinking that you're going to kill them, but that's not true. Because the soul never dies. And they're going to perish by the results of their own karma, by the results of their own sinful activity. Their time has come. And that is my determination. They're not going home today. Whether you fight or you don't fight, doesn't matter. They're not going home. And Krishna laid it out, the fact of the matter, with such conviction and confidence that in his association, Arjuna completely turned around. And in the end, he says, Sarimam Tvam Prapanam. He says, I am prepared to act according to your instruction. So in the association of Krishna, or Krishna's representative, the darkness of ignorance, the limitations of our knowledge are dissipated. And in the association of great spiritual souls and spiritual masters who represent and who are the spokesman for Krishna, we will be endowed, we will be embedded, we will be surcharged with unlimited confidence. And this was said of Arjuna's attitude at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, after having been exposed to that knowledge and confidence of Krishna. These aren't Arjuna's words, these are Sanjaya's words, but Sanjaya is describing accurately the situation. Wherever there's Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there's Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. And in those days, battles were engaged in, when both sides were ready, they would indicate that by blowing their conch shells. So on the other side, they blew their conch shells first, Duryodhana, the great Bhishma, Dronacharya, Karna, all these Maharatas. And it said the sound was uproarious. It vibrated on the earth and the sky. It would have struck terror into the hearts of any other opponents. But because Arjuna had just been surcharged with confidence and knowledge by Krishna, he already knew the outcome of the battle. He already knew that with Krishna as his chariot driver going to be successful, he wasn't intimidated. And right back at him, you know, Krishna and Arjuna, boo, boo. And their confidence was so high that they shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. Duryodhana and company knew from the very beginning, by the tumultuous blowing of Arjuna, that they had no chance to win, that they were going to perish. Now, on one level, Arjuna was outmanned. Bhishma and Dronacharya and Karna were very, very formidable warriors, and they had taught, some of them had taught Arjuna everything he knew. They had more. They had less soldiers. The Pandavas had 11 divisions. The Kauravas had 18 divisions. But they were confident in spite of seemingly being overmanned because Krishna was on their side. It says in the Bible, and if you have God by you, you can walk in the valley of the shadow of death and fear no evil. I hope you can see this cat walking across a line of about 150 German shepherds. That's one Krishna conscious cat, I'm telling you. He's on his way to join the Sankirtan party in downtown Salt Lake City, and not one of those German shepherds is going to lay a tooth on him. So always remember that Krishna has put seeds of greatness in each and every one of you. So stand tall, be confident. To be confident means that you'll always be poised. Imagine Prabhupada getting off the boat, a strange country, with the order to spread Krishna consciousness amongst people who at that time were taking LSD, smoking marijuana, they believed in free love, they were eating meat, they were taking intoxicants. That's impossible. An old man to ignite a whole generation with spiritual ideas and a purified lifestyle, it's impossible. And yet Prabhupada carried himself, he conducted himself with confidence. He wrote a poem as he was coming into Boston Harbor. He said, "Krishna, you have sent me here. I do not know why you have sent me here. And I do not know, I cannot even imagine how this change is going to take place. Can't imagine how these Americans are going to give up intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, and eating. But because you've sent me here, I know that you already have the plan in place. I don't know what that plan is. I can't even imagine it. But I'm confident that you are the Almighty God and it will come about. And so please use me as your instrument." So he may not have felt confident, he may not have seen the way, but he carried himself with confidence. He did not let a single person know that he was what he was feeling inside. Because it's not about how you're feeling, it's about what's right. Prabhupada used to talk to this Mr. Rubens when he was living literally from hand to mouth. He would go and sit on a park bench every once in a while, and there would be a Mr. Rubens, elderly Jewish man, who would come and sit with him, and they would talk, and Prabhupada would talk about all the temples, all the disciples, and all the income, all the deities, and Mr. Rubens would be like, this is just an old man. I mean, he's just sitting in the park. He doesn't have any money. We're just kind of passing time. What's he talking about? And one time he asked him, you don't seem to have temples and disciples and, you don't seem that. How is it that you're always talking about them? And Prabhupada said, they are there, only time separates them. Only time separates them. So he may not have felt like supremely confident at every moment, but even a casual acquaintance on a park bench, he did not confide in him that he was scared or that he wasn't completely confident. He showed nobody a crack in the armor because he was always mindful of representing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is an important point. We live in a feel-good generation. If it feels good, do it. They want immediate gratification. Hardly anybody thinks of the long-term consequences of their actions. We need to act not by feeling, but we need to act by what we know is right. We may feel scared. We may feel abandoned. We may feel outmatched. We may feel incapable of that task. When the boss at work gives you a task, which you think is far beyond your abilities, don't just say, "No, I can't do that." But think that that opportunity would have not come your way had God not meant it to come your way and had He not equipped you to be more than you could be. More than you could be in the natural. Your mind may be telling you, "No, I can't do that." But you need to remember that Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says, "All things are possible when I take your side." So even if you don't feel it, it says you can fake it until you make it. Or a better way of putting it is faith it until you make it. Like that. If we act in fear instead of faith, we'll never realize the potential that God has put in us. We'll never find the treasures that are inside us. It's easy to focus on everything we're not, but we need to focus on what we can become because the Lord of the universe is inside of us. Krishna says, "Yoga sema vahami aham." What they have, who are engaged in my service, what they have, I preserve. What they lack, I carry. When you're weak, He's strong. When you don't see a way, Krishna will make a way. When enemies come against you, Krishna will fight your battles for you. Some of you are busy celebrating other people, but God's saying, this is your time. He's about to release an opportunity that can thrust you to a whole new level. That may not happen naturally according to the dictates of your mind, but it's a supernatural thrust. It's a supernatural catapult. Krishna is breathing in your direction. You wouldn't be here today if He didn't have great things in mind for you. If He wasn't preparing you to accomplish impossible dreams. Says here, the Lord opens doors no man can shut. He can help you accomplish dreams you never thought possible. So when those opportunities come, don't you dare shrink back. When they come, think, "I am well able. I am a child of the Most High God. I am equipped. I am empowered. I can do what Krishna has called me to do." When the monkeys came to the shore of the Indian Ocean and there was a rumor that Sita was being held captive 900 miles away on the island of Lanka, many of the monkeys declared themselves, in fact, all of the monkeys declared themselves incapable of jumping the 800 miles to Sri Lanka. You know, maybe some of them had worked out a little bit, kept themselves shape, but they ate too many gulab jamuns, you know, too many pakoras, you know, too much sweet rice. And Prabhupada even wrote a poem, big, big monkey, big, big belly, ceiling jumping, melancholy. But only Hanuman had that sense, that lifelong sense, that God will call me. God will call me to do some superhuman task. And He will empower me. But what I have to do on my part is keep myself in readiness. And keep myself in faith instead of in fear. So only He kept Himself in faith. He kept Himself fit. And while some of the monkeys could jump 200 miles, some of them could jump 300 or 400 miles, He was the only one that could jump 800 miles. So He rose to the destiny to which the Lord called Him. It is said that faith is to a devotee what fuel is to an airplane. You can have a big 747 airplane with landing gear and wings and instrument panels and all kinds of equipment, but if there's not fuel in the tank, it's just going to sit on the runway. It's not going to do anything. So you can be talented, you can be beautiful, you can be bright, but if you don't have confidence, you're not going to go anywhere in life. You're not going to accomplish anything. You're not even going to get off the ground, what to speak of going higher. When I was selling cookies in Southern California, sometimes on the weekends, before it was time to go out in the cookie sales, I would run with this group. I forget what we called ourselves, but we were a running club, and we'd meet like 6 o'clock in the morning at the track at University of California at Riverside. We would do speed work. And then on the weekends, we would go to different races as a group. And there was one member of our club, her name was Peggy. And she seemed to have a lot of money, and she bought us good uniforms, good warm-out suits with logos and stuff like that. We were the best-looking group, you know. Everybody was like, wow, you know, these guys are sharp, you know. And so I couldn't help but be curious about Peggy, you know, who she was. Well, this is her husband, Oriol Barreto. He came to America on the boat. He came to America on the boat, literally an immigrant with nothing. Except confidence. He had no college degree. He had no high school degree. He was a refugee from Cuba. He got off the boat. And somehow or other he got a job in an engineering office cleaning up. And as he would clean up and go around the draft boards, he would look over the shoulders of the engineers. And he would ask them questions. And at the end of the night, when everyone went home, he would get out the books, the manuals and the instructions, and he would study. And then next day he would look and he would ask questions. One day he came up to the boss and he said, I can do this. And the boss said, what's your training? What's your background? What's your experience? He said, nada, nada, nada. But I know I can do this. I've learned this and that and the other thing, and I know I can do this. So because he was confident, the boss also began to have confidence. Well, if he says he can do it, at least I owe him a try. So he gave him a project, he gave him a place to sit, and he did it. He did a great job. And within 3 or 4 years, this guy, this immigrant, was heading up the whole office of engineers. He was managing the whole office, drawing down a big six-figure salary. After a few years of doing that, he decided he wanted to do something bigger. And he branched out, he went out on his own, and he invented, I don't know if you remember the dog glue. Remember the dog glue? I don't know if they're still out there, but they've been Walmarts and came and made millions and millions of dollars. One time, the running club was invited to spend a New Year's weekend in his 15,000 square foot house near Lake Elsinore. Nobody was there but us. We were able to have the run of the house. I cooked vegetarian food for everybody. Nobody was announced because he'd taken 35 members of his family to Hawaii for a week, like that. So, you know, what did he have? No education, no money, he wasn't even a Native American. But just see how much you can achieve with confidence. And many other people, more talented, more brilliant, more beautiful, never ever accomplish anything in their life because they don't recognize themselves as sons and daughters of the Most High Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, it's important to realize what our lineage is and not be timid, and not downplay our abilities, not discounting what you can do. Be your own resume. Sell yourself. When other people believe in you, when you believe in yourself, that'll open doors to newer and newer opportunities. Sometimes someone will come to us and they'll compliment us on a God-given ability. You have such natural athleticism. You're such a good accountant. You have a way with numbers. You're compassionate with people. You have a vision. You have an art of envisioning what will happen in the future. And we say, oh, shucks, you know, no, 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 no. It's not humility to discount your ability, because God has embedded that ability within you. And you shouldn't be self-effacing and discount that. It doesn't mean you brag that I'm the great this and I'm the great that. But you can brag on God, that He's the source from which all abilities come, and I am gifted. People have told me, you know, true, you're a good speaker. And I used to just say no and brush it off like that. But now I say, yeah, I'm a good speaker. God has blessed me with that ability. And I'm bragging on God, not myself. If He wanted to, I could be paralyzed. I could have drool coming out of my mouth and sitting in a wheelchair within a second if He wanted to. So if you have an ability, that comes from God. And as long as you use it in God's service, there's a good chance that He will continue that and even increase that as well. I heard a story about a rivalry, a high school football team rivalry. It was the last game of the season. Whoever won would win the division championship, and it was a very close game, going back and forth, one score and then a counter score and a counter score. Went into overtime, and the home team was driving down the field, but they got stopped, and then the coach had to make a decision whether to punt the ball away, play it safe, or kick a field goal. Or try a field goal. Now the problem was, it was a windy day, and the wind was blowing against the kicker. Another problem was, he'd already missed two field goals already in the game. Another problem was that the two field goals he'd missed were shorter than the one that was in front of him to attempt. So the coach called timeout. You know, he's wondering what to do. Finally he thought, well, I'll ask the kicker what he thinks about the situation. But he couldn't find the kicker anywhere up and down the sidelines. So then he looked out in the field, and there was the kicker lining up the field goal, you know. He said, well, he seems to have confidence that he can nail this one. And so if he's confident, I'll be confident himself, you know. So some of you are hearing what I'm saying and say, no, true, I can't do that. I can't take this opportunity. I can't, because I've done that in the past. I tried and I failed. God doesn't care how many times you fail. In fact, more times you fail, the more you have experience. The more times you did the wrong thing, the more you know what the right thing is. God doesn't care that you failed. He doesn't discount you or write you off, whether you failed once, or 10 times, or 100 times. He cares about one thing. Are you still on the field? Are you in the game? That place kicker could have easily been discouraged. Oh, I missed two field goals that are shorter. This is a longer one. The wind is against me. The pressure, you know, the whole season rests on him. But he was still, even though he failed twice in the game, and this was a less sure attempt, he still was in the game. He was on the field. He was looking for opportunities. And indeed, he nailed it. He kicked it right through the uprights. The crowd went riled. They won the game. Carried him off the field on their shoulders. So, you know, we may have failed, but hey, that was yesterday. That was the day. Today is today. Today is a new day. Power of the Lord is within me. When you rise up with confidence like that, you put fuel in your jet. And you can never even imagine how high it's going to take you. Living with confidence means that we never lose our poise, no matter what. Even if we feel fear on the inside, we don't show it. We don't admit nervousness. We be strong. We fake it. We faith it if we have to. We're not acting on what we feel, but we're acting on what we know. That opportunity would not have come our way if God had not already equipped us in order to achieve it. We may feel unqualified, but we need to act like we're well able. And all of us, either now or in the past or in the future, I guarantee you, you'll face what seem like impossible situations. You'll get embroiled in a lawsuit. You'll get a medical report that doesn't look good. You'll be worried about a relationship between your wife or between your children. You may have financial complications because of losing your job or your investments go bad. And it seems daunting. It seems impossible. You may feel fear, but don't show the fear. If you act like you want to be, you will become like that. You can actually initiate the feelings of confidence. If, even though you don't feel confident, if you act confident, the feeling will come. And the recollection will come that if God is with me, who dare be against me? So get in the habit of looking people in the eyes, speaking with a strong, clear voice. It's good to celebrate people, but you need to celebrate yourself too. You need to recognize the wonders, the miracles that God has embedded within me. And we need to start by celebrating ourselves. If we'll shake off the intimidation, the insecurity, and we rise up with confidence, knowing who we are and whose we are, the creator of the universes will breathe in our directions. And when he does, we will overcome every obstacle, defeat every enemy, fulfill every dream. We will become everything Krishna has created us to be, and we will accomplish everything that he has intended for us to accomplish. Can you say it with me? Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama.